This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to this week's live training session, Authentic Persuasion session number 36. Super excited to hear. My name again is Jason Cutter. I wrote a book called Selling with Authentic Persuasion, Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker. Got published in late 2020. And that has kind of sent me on a mission and a focus to help people in the world of sales sell differently. And what's interesting, and this will lend itself into the topic that we're going to cover today, is where does the fact that people who do not want to be in sales or don't think they're in sales or don't want to recognize or acknowledge that they're in sales, how does that fit in with what people think and then what the world actually needs, which is part of why I do this. I am a guy with a marine biology degree. At one point in my life, while standing on a not very big boat relative to the sharks that were circling us, I was responsible for ensuring the large great white sharks circling our boat were not going to eat the bait that was attracting them close by so that we could tag them for research, for tracking studies. And that moment there, when I look back as a 19, 20-year-old, 21-year-old standing on a boat surrounded by sharks, that was safer and better and a much wiser decision in my mind than dealing with anything having to do with people, any kind of career, any kind of path, any kind of anything to do with other people, that was still a better, safer way to go. Layer on top of that, what I was taught, what I shown, and what I learned and picked up about the world when it comes to salespeople and how it gross manipulation, pushy, self-centered people in sales trying to get you to buy something because they want to benefit. That was my impression of sales. Led me to do anything other than sales, other than people. In fact, I worked in a pet store and that wasn't sales because I felt like I was just helping people with their aquariums. I didn't think of it as sales. It was retail, but it wasn't sales. And then even when I was in college and I was doing shark stuff, and then I'm like, all right, I need a job. Let me go get a job at a restaurant. Okay, last thing I want to do is deal with hungry people because I know how I am. I know how others are when they're hungry and in a restaurant. So maybe I'll be a busser because at least I'm not talking to them. I'm just clearing plates and filling waters and I can do that. Then it turned out I was pretty good with people. Still didn't think of it as sales. So much that I've learned now that if I went back into the restaurant business and waited tables, the things that I've learned, the things that I would take from the world of sales and persuasion and then bring that into that role, it would be amazing. It would be so fun, be so effective, great sales customer experience for people at the restaurant, and then great revenue on my side. I know it would just be fun learning and reverse engineering what I've done, but put it back there. So it wasn't until 27 when I got my first sales job, officially sales job, officially professional, but it was in the mortgage business. It was 2002. It was the real estate boom was going nuts. It was pure order taking. I literally learned nothing about sales until years and years later. Now, if you're a longtime listener of these training sessions or tuning into them, if you're watching this live, just so you know, I appreciate you tuning this in. I can see the people, see the number on LinkedIn that's there. It's also being streamed on YouTube if you'd rather watch it there or other times in the future you can. It's also on the Cutter Consulting Group Facebook page. This is all streaming live. And then, of course, the replays are housed there as well. So if you want to go back and check out the other sessions, you can. And then also welcome if you're listening in the podcast. This week marks the end of week one of season 6 of the Authentic Persuasion Show, literally 440 plus episodes in, back to 5 days a week. Had a great, great guest episode session, part one and part two with Rita Alush from EDM. And that was a great conversation. Make sure to check it out. If you're on the podcast, welcome. Make sure to subscribe, get all the episodes. If you're not on the podcast, you're not listening to it, make sure to use your podcast player. There's tons of them out there. They're all free. Subscribe to the podcast, check them out, because this content is going there. So if this is your first time tuning in, it's not my normal intro. Normally I talk about why I do this and I run into it, but I just felt like I wanted to dive into a little bit of what this is about, why I'm doing this from a background as we get into this. And if you haven't, if you're tuning in now, maybe you haven't checked out the show in a while, or as your first time listening, the last 5 or 6 sessions that I've done on these weekly live authentic persuasion training sessions have actually been Q&A. So they've been questions that I've gathered, people have asked me offline, in training, clients, so on. And then I've just been answering them on my own in front of the camera and the mic to help people who might have similar questions, right? There's one of those things where if you're in a meeting and someone asks a question, there's a good chance that others in that meeting have that same question. They either were just afraid to ask, didn't know they could ask, or they just hadn't gotten to it yet. And so I found by doing those Q&A sessions, it usually resonates with more people because people have similar type questions. Even if they have something specific for them, there might be something general that could help them. So make sure to check those out because those are really fun. I really enjoy doing it. It's the best part of when I'm presenting, training, or speaking to any group is literally just opening it up for a Q&A, hot seat coaching, where it's just live fire. Like who knows what someone's going to ask me, and then give it my best based on all my experience and things that I've done in the last now 20 years of being in and around sales. So make sure to check those out. So today, my focus, my topic today is talking about why sales feels like such a dirty word. Now, part of why I went into that background and kind of the intro that I was covering in the beginning is that's where I was at, right? Like, a lot of people think, and they listen to me talk, or they talk to me, or they, you know, I'll do training, I'll do these kind of things. And a lot of people think that I was just a natural born salesperson, which is totally debatable. It's actually a chapter in the book where I talk about and my feelings against that. I'll call it a myth or that kind of theory. But a lot of people think that just because of what I do, and I've been doing it for a while, that must be natural, must be easy, must have been born this way. I interview and I talk to a lot of people who they are that person where they were in sales from a very early age. Maybe they in a family where they had no money and the only way to pay for their own stuff or get the things that they want was to go out and sell things. And so that's what they did. Found out they were really good at it. And then they realized, like I have a friend, Colin Mitchell, who I've done many podcasts with back and forth, where he realized like sales was a great way to make as much money as he wanted. And he was good at it at an early age and just thought this is the vehicle for me to do what I want for my life, for my family, for my kids, for everybody. So there's that path. And you hear a lot of those stories, but what you don't necessarily hear a lot is about stories like mine, like what I said, where I am a guy when I was a kid, shy, awkward, bullied, late bloomer. I'm still an only child, so I didn't really have other influences in my life, to two loving, amazing parents who are still together today. They are both young parents and then also both analytical. My mom was in banking and finance and then moved her way up in organizations. My dad was an engineer out of the Navy, a nuclear engineer on ships, and then went into engineering and then moved his way up. So two very analytical parents, such that my mom hated salespeople based on the stuff that she saw when she had one of her first jobs in a furniture store in the back office. She would literally sit there processing accounting, paperwork, things like that, and listen to the salespeople behind the scenes talking about the customers, bad mouthing customers, talking about what they did to customers and how they overcharged them and how they took advantage of them or tricked them or things like that. So she got to see behind the scenes what those type of salespeople talk about and what they do, you know, from behind the scenes. And so that left an impression on her, which then of course became part for the family, which was salespeople were not to be trusted. And I think a lot of that is just where I get my sense early on and then why I do what I do now, which is, okay, what's the opposite? What does the world really need? Which we're going to get into, but then also where it just confirms what a lot of people in the world think and feel, which is sales is a dirty word. I used to go to conferences years ago when I was in the mortgage business, and I would go to these conferences about especially generating referrals. Brian Buffini was big at the time, would go to these things. And it was interesting. One of the things he talked about is where people don't like to say the word sales. They're not in sales. And the reason why is because sales is just feels like a gross and dirty word. And people don't like to admit it. They don't want to be associated with the Wolf of Wall Street boiler room type of crowd, the used car salesman, the new car salesman, the furniture salesperson, right? Like, people who are in a role that should involve sales or selling, it, depending on their mindset, they don't even want to call themselves sales because it's a dirty word. Sometimes people debate this. Sometimes people want to argue. And what I'll usually do is say, okay, what is your title? And people are like, oh, I'm in sales. And I'm like, what's your title? What title is your company using so that the world doesn't think or associate it with sales, air quotes, four letter word sales. And so then you hear things like account executive, business development rep, sales development rep, account manager, client success. Like so many companies use everything but sales in their titles because they just don't want people to be triggered by what that means. Because in the world with obviously I haven't talked to everybody, but I've talked to enough people and I feel the general vibe where sales is just still that dirty word. And why is that? Well, so here's a little background and then we'll talk about what you really could be focusing on, what really matters. And Michaela posted a note on LinkedIn here. And I love this. She said, restaurant industry is a great lead into sales without realizing it. I was in the restaurant industry for 6 years myself. And I spent 4.5 years in it. And it really helped me realize it. And I think what's interesting on this total side note, and Michaela, thanks for that message, is what's interesting is that if it was done different, if the restaurant industry did what other companies also don't do with people and helping them sell in the right way, right? They talk about upselling and you try to sell them dessert, try to do this, but like how much more effective would it be? And then also, because here's the most important part, both for you as that person in that role, but then also for the customer. What kind of customer experience? Because when sales is done right, and this is a spoiler alert, when sales is done right, it is for and with the other person, and it's an act of service. And I will tell you, when I go to a restaurant and somebody's really good at what they do, I know they're selling me more stuff. Maybe they're trying to upsell, but when it's done in the right way, I feel good about it. And I'm happy with that experience because I know what they're offering me is actually beneficial and I accept it and I'm okay with that. So I love that. All right, let's get back on this or I'll just totally ruin everything, spoil all the good surprise. So here's the thing. Why does it feel dirty? Well, back in the day and really not too long ago, the big key was that companies and salespeople had all the leverage. They had all the information, they had all the knowledge, and you had to go to them to get help. Obviously, things are different now, right? We all have within arm's reach at all times a day, all the world's information and knowledge, right? Even the experts say you shouldn't have it in your room. You shouldn't have it next to your bed. You shouldn't check it first thing in the morning. You shouldn't look at it right before you go to bed. But we literally, most everybody has it within arm's reach. You will easily turn around, go back to the house, go back to wherever you are. If you forget your phone, that's not necessarily true with other things, right? It used to be like, I've got to make sure I have my wallet, my keys, I got to have this, I got to have that. Now it's, do I have my phone? Everything else, right, is something you could find or deal with versus that. So back in the day, not too long ago, we're not even talking too long ago. Like, for example, if you wanted to buy a car, the thing was, is that you would have to either wait for the newspaper, maybe the Sunday newspaper with the listing of cars, call a dealership, but they're not going to tell you information, or actually go to a dealership. And we're not talking that long ago, 15, 20 years ago. And then things like Auto Trader came out with this, you know, free magazine that you could get like once a week. You're still at the victim of what's in there. And then, you know, you'll have pricing, but what does that mean? How do you compare? So you would have to go to a dealership to find out information, find out price, find out details, facts, figures, things like that. If you didn't have a brochure, and you're up to the whim of that salesperson who would then try to sell you that car, wheel and deal, make a deal. And if you wanted to comparison shop, it would involve you leaving the dealership, driving to another dealership that has the same or similar car, and then going through that process with that salesperson as well, so that you could compare and say, well, down the street or the next town over, they're offering this, which is a better deal, right? And most people don't want to go through that much work. And most salespeople, especially in the car dealership world, they're not going to let you get off that lot easily. So you're really not going to go that route. They're going to do the, you know, what is it going to take for you to buy this car today before you leave mode? So back in that mode, they had all the power. They had all the knowledge and information, which means they had the control of the process, right? And they had the leverage. In fact, if you've read the book Freakonomics, there's a chapter in there that talks about this. I won't say the title of the chapter. I think it's a brilliant chapter, but part of it is talking about real estate agents and how, you know, them having control of the MLS then controls the information. You need to go to a realtor to find out information about houses that are available. And then basically they control the process and they semi-own you because they own the data and information. Now, you want to buy a house, you can go online. You could look at the housing prices. You could actually do it all without dealing with a realtor or having a realtor. Like, so much has changed. However, the old school model is the same. Those old school manipulation salespeople still think they have the power and the information, the control. And so they leverage that and they push that. And then they play games, they play tricks, they try all kinds of things. Again, the manipulation side, when you're pushing someone to do something they don't necessarily want to do that won't benefit them, that's wrong. The rest of it, that's debatable, right? Like, who has the information and knowledge? But really, it's understanding that all of us, most of us, do not want to be manipulated, do not want to be tricked. It happens, especially if you feel powerless or you don't know better, but people don't want to deal with that. People are afraid of that. And here's what's interesting is that in this day and age, if you're going into a store or reaching out to a company and you haven't done any research, then it's almost like, A, you almost deserve what you're going to get because you're not protecting yourself and being aware. And B, you also know you're rolling the dice because you don't know what's going on, right? Like, when I was a kid, we would go to a car dealership, and this is before the internet, before all the stuff that, you know, is convenient now. We would go to a car dealership to shop for cars and see what's available and test drive, and then, you know, go through that whole negotiation process. And the pinnacle of how terrible it was is one time when I was a kid, I think I was 11 at the time, and we spent 9 hours at a Toyota dealership while my parents, mostly my mom, negotiated with every single person they could throw at her, and we dealt with their whole process. And that sucked as a kid. No internet, no electronics, TV in the lobby that had like 3 channels, and it was probably on the sports channel, and nothing to do. And so that's what you did, was you knew, if I'm going to go into this situation, I'm going into a battle against this other person, and their goal is to sell me something and make money. My goal is to not get ripped off, but I want to get this thing. And that's what you dealt with. So that has left this impression that sales is bad, that sales is the problem. And the thing is, and I talked to somebody the other day, which was interesting and it kind of sparked part of this conversation, is he actually said that for him as a consultant, he works with a lot of departments in companies like HR, customer service, and things like that. He used to have sales, like selling effectiveness and be good at sales in his documentation. He removed it and found that then companies would hire him and then people would actually listen to him, because even though it's persuasion, even though it's influence, it's sales, it's, you know, under the same umbrella, that even just the word sales was making it so people thought he was trying to teach them how to do these old school things. And I think that is the challenge. That is the problem. Because again, like I said early on, kind of spoiled it, is that when it's done right, and I will use the word right, and right being with an intention where your goal is to help somebody get to a better place, whether you're selling them something or you're just giving them advice and suggestions because you can't help them. When you're doing that with those kind of intentions, where I want it to be win-win, I want to help you get to a better place, then sales is service. Sales is something you're doing for somebody and with somebody. Here's the key. And this is the part where some people say, well, but if I'm just trying to help other people, I'm not going to get paid. No, if you're doing it and it's valuable, you should definitely get paid, right? Your doctor isn't helping you for free to get you to a better place, right? They're not doing what they do just as a complete free benefit. They're doing it and they expect to be paid, and they expect to be paid relative to the value they're providing, right? All professionals are. Here's one of the challenges. In sales, sales is not a profession. And people are going to argue. This might trigger some people. I will expect some answers and responses from people who don't continue to listen for the next maybe few minutes. But here's the thing. Sales is not a profession. And the reason I say that is there's no entrance exam. There's no qualifiers. There's no background checks. There's no governing body. There's no oath that you have to take. And then there's no consequences for doing it wrong, other than maybe severe government action. But otherwise, there's nothing. There's nothing like, let's say, malpractice, right? If you're a profession in other industries as a professional, then you have those things, right? Even again, we can talk about, I talk about doctors all the time. We could talk about lawyers, but even if we go to a mode where, let's say, somebody who's an electrician, okay, somebody who is a professional electrician, they had to study, they had to take a test and pass it to show competency. There is some kind of governing body, the state regulators, things like that, over electricians and that industry. And then they have consequences if they mess anything up. They have to carry insurance. They have to be licensed. They have to tell people that they're licensed. You see that all the time on their business cards or on the side of their trucks, like everything. Like realtors have to be licensed as a professional. Mortgage people have to be licensed. Insurance, financial advisors. But sales itself is not. And I will contest that it and argue that it's not a profession. Now, it is a career. You can do it, but as a profession in the category of professions, it is not. So the challenge is it's up to each of us to be a professional and act like a professional, even without all of those guidelines. Of course, this is why sales as a label, as a industry, as a career path, as a type of work has the potential for having such a negative connotation, because literally it's up to each person. And what happens is each person isn't inherently going to care about the benefit of other people, and at times or all the time might only care about themselves. And if that's the case, then it's for them, sales isn't something I'm doing for or with you. Sales is something I'm doing to you, because I need the benefit. I need to pay my bills. I need to feel good about myself. I just want to make money. I just want to blah, 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 right? Then it's that old school. Then it's that snake oil salesman mode, right? And if you're not familiar with it, snake oil salesman, and that term actually comes from people who would go from town to town back in the day, and they would sell something that they had as this magical elixir or things that would help people feel better. And sometimes they would plant people in the audience or ahead of them to, you know, be witness and testimonials for how great of a cure it was and what it took care of. And then what would happen is they would sell, and they would make a bunch of money from that town until it got to the point where the jig was up and people realized, wait, this isn't good. And this is just, you know, water and a whole bunch of other stuff, but it really doesn't do anything. And then what would happen is that snake oil salesman would then have to move to the next town that hadn't heard of him and his process, and then repeat it over and over again. Again, this is going back to the old model, which is that person had all the information. You couldn't verify it. There was no internet. There's no way to take the power away from that person selling or even balancing it. That person had it all. So they move from town to town. If that is the intention, then that's what the world is going to think is sales. And that's why I say it's not a profession, because it's not regulated. There is no governing body. There is no oath. There's nothing we all agree to as far as the way it should be done. And of course, within each profession, like electrician and plumber and auto mechanics and all these things, there are some people who don't do things right or take advantage of people or tell somebody they have a problem and then charge them for it. And, you know, overcharge them for it or fix things that aren't really broken, right? It's the nightmare we all have about taking our car to a mechanic that we don't know, is that they're going to do that to us. Unless you know cars really well, you're at the whim of them being a professional and telling you, and hopefully it's accurate, but that's obviously the game that you're playing unless you know cars really well or it's somebody that you trust. The internet has really balanced that out. That's the part where now, thanks to the internet and reviews online, If somebody's not doing the right thing, they're not going to last super long. They're going to be exposed at some point. So it's balancing it out in those professions. Sales, obviously, the key is to be focusing on doing what is best for the other person. It's why I talk a lot about your role as a salesperson, and moving to and becoming a sales professional is to be the guide. It is to help that person get to a better place, right? Proverbially, get up the mountain safely and successfully, whatever that is for that person. And obviously what you're looking for is the intersection with the product or service that you're offering, so that you can then help them get there as a way to, you know, succeed with your business and then make money. And when that matches up together, then it's fantastic, right? That's what you want. That's the key that you want to focus on. Like, the reason why sales feels dirty, the reason why people are afraid to use the word sales in their title, or that what that's what they do, or even customers don't want to deal with a salesperson, is because they don't know what they're getting. In your process, in what you're doing, in your mindset, in your focus, you want to make sure you're not that person. You're not in that mode. Now, of course, I'm going to guess, if you're watching this, if you're tuning in live, listening to it, watching the replay, whatever that is, then it already resonates with you enough, because otherwise it's either that, or you're here, you're listening, watching something called the Authentic Persuasion Training Session, because you want to hear this and you want to debunk it, you know, like it's some kind of conspiracy or myth. Assuming that's not the case, and if you do, good luck, because I'd like for you to prove how manipulation is a much better long-term sales strategy, because I don't think it would be. I'd be happy to do a debate on that. Fundamentally, everyone else here, listening, watching, tuning in, you understand and agree that this would be a good way to go. So it's about making sure you relay that to your customers. You have that in your mindset, right? That's why I wrote the book that I did, and the subtitles Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker, because a lot of people go into one of two modes that I see. It's well, if I have to be successful, I'll go this route with the manipulation, the old school sales tactics, right? Or, which is the mode that I had, which is, if that's what sales is, I'm going to do the exact opposite. But usually what happens, the exact opposite, is build relationships, build rapport, care about people, want to help them, but then you become an order taker, because you attribute a lot of the things, and I attributed a lot of the things that salespeople do in their process with the broken model of sales and the manipulation, versus the things that you need to do to help somebody get unstuck, which is a totally different topic. I've done some sessions on that before, from the Authentic Persuasion Pathway focus. And by the way, side note, if you didn't check those out, because this is session 36, so there's been a bunch there. If you want, I actually made a playlist on my YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube, search Jason Cutter, find the channel, of course, subscribe, turn on notifications so you can get all the videos, because I'm posting things all the time. But if you look in there, there is a video series called the Authentic Persuasion Pathway, where I took the videos that I had done from the session, made a playlist out of it, so you can go through just those segments where I talk about what your goal is and helping people feel safe, and why they're stuck, and why they're afraid of you and afraid of everything, and then what your role is, and then the five steps to get people out of it. So make sure to check that out, because it's still, I think it's 7 videos. So, you know, it's 7 times what, 45 minutes or so. So still a lot of content, but it's going to be the ones that would help you in this pathway process. So what happens? People either think they have to manipulate, or they go the other extreme, which is, I'm going to do anything other than that, right? They say the golden rule, treat other people like I want to be treated. I don't like being treated like this negative manipulation. And so I would never do that to somebody else. So I'm going to be nice, and I'm going to hope people buy from me. The challenge is that usually leads to very broke salespeople, and people who leave sales because they think sales is the problem. Sales doesn't work, and they're not good at sales. In fact, what I would say, and most of the people I work with, once I help them with the training and the coaching, is they realize that those parts that they have, when you combine that with a process and with the right mindset, now you can be in the middle, acting like a sales professional, selling like that, persuading, having conversations like that. And then what happens is you can leverage those things and not cross over the line in the manipulation, but truly help people and then get paid for it. And that's really the key that you would want to focus on, is shift out of that order taker mode. But don't worry and don't feel like, oh, the next stop is crossing the line and doing these things. No, it's not. It's about having a process and still helping people, but also being in control and being a leader. In fact, in Selling with Authentic Persuasion, I wrote a chapter about sales is leadership. And I don't mean being a leader, being a manager, being a supervisor. I mean being a leader of the sales process, of the conversation, of that person you're dealing with. They're looking for a leader. They're looking for guidance, and they would love nothing more than a professional to help them, especially to help them feel good versus what they're worried about, right? And kind of circling back, my parents, my mom especially, again, she still really hates bad salespeople, and bad being like the self-centered, manipulated ones that are trying to push her to buy something, and she can tell it's only for them and it's not for her. She can't stand that. She can't stand it if it was a car dealership, a furniture store, a restaurant, a server who's trying to, you know, push their own agenda on her. She can't stand it. But what she loves is somebody who helps her, right? And I think this is what most people agree with. And when they experience that person who's in sales, she absolutely enjoys, let's say, going to a car dealership, talking to somebody who actually cares and wants to help her find what's best for her. And then she's totally willing to pay for it, right? She doesn't even negotiate that much because she appreciates a professional. She appreciates the value in the service, and she doesn't have to fight against it. It's when somebody feels like they're trying to get one over on her, then the gloves come off, right? And I'm the same way as a customer. When I meet somebody who's helping me, I want to buy a new couch, and they're guiding me through the process, and they're showing me options, and they're helping me find what I want, not what meets their quota. I don't care. Like, price, obviously, and budget, but the rest of it's not, I'm not going to nickel and dime things. It doesn't matter. I'm a very easy customer from that standpoint. And so I think that's the key, is a lot of people are looking for that. People are guided. They want that in the world so much. That's why, you know, one of the things I usually start out the show is saying, I'm on a mission to enable and empower over 1 million authentic persuaders in the world. So imagine people who are using authentic persuasion to help people buy in the right way and make the right decisions for themselves. Imagine all of us as customers. It's literally a selfish reason why I'm doing this, because I, as a customer, want to be able to go out there in the world and encounter someone who's in a sales role, who's incentivized to sell. And I want to know that they actually care about me, and they want to guide me the right way, and they want to help me find the best solution. And then I'm super happy to pay for it, right? That's the economy. That's commerce. It's capitalism. And I want to support that, but I want to know that I'm dealing with someone. So that's why I'm on that mode. Lastly, one last thing on here, and this is in the notes I was making before coming into this, is this expression. Which is, people don't like to be sold to, people like to buy. Hear that a lot. Hear that a lot as the, feeling feisty today, as the cop-out for salespeople selling the way they do, or getting them to not sell the way they do, or for customers who don't like. And so here's the thing. In my experience and opinion is, people don't like to be sold to, they like to buy. The emphasis on that is sold to. People don't like to be manipulated. Now, it works. If it didn't work, salespeople would stop doing it. Just like advertising obviously works because it gets people to buy stuff, right? All the crap that we all get in the mail, direct mail, it must work because they keep doing it, and they wouldn't keep doing it unless it paid off, right? So it must work. So manipulation and tricks and tactics work. So many companies who do the, you know, where it, today is June 17th, coming up on the end of the quarter, end of the month soon, people, all these companies are going to be doing like pushes with their salespeople, especially B2B, to try to end the quarter strong. That's manipulation, right? When you're offering discounts, when you're pushing people to buy on your timeline because of your quotas, your numbers, and your quarter, that's manipulation. I'm sorry. It hurts, but it's true. Here's the thing, is people don't like to be sold to in the mode of where it's you and your agenda versus them, right? I think people like to be influenced. People like to be persuaded. People want to be helped. People want to be guided. People want an expert. People want wisdom more than anything. They want to feel safe about moving forward. They want to feel like they're buying. And the reason why that statement is so important And where it's really at is control. In my opinion, the people don't like to be sold to, they like to buy, is because people want to feel like they're in control. When they're sold to, then that means they are losing control, they're not in control, or they feel like someone else's control and pushing them forward. And that's where the issue is. And it's not even about sold or buying. It's about control. People want to feel like they're buying. People like buying because they don't want to feel out of control and they want to feel like it's their decision, right? It's up to them. Now, there are people, and this is the flip side, and it's usually by people who like to sell, where they say like people like to be sold to. People like being sold, right? They like being hyped up and excited. And I disagree with that. I think sometimes people like it and they get caught up in the motivation, the excitement of the late night TV infomercial, and they're being sold to, right? And the question is after the excitement wears off, after the energy wears off, after the glow of the sales pitch wears off, are they still actually happy they were sold to? Are they still happy about that timeshare they own or those copper frying pans or whatever it is that they got sold? Because, you know, in that mode, like people like to be sold. No, I don't think they do. In the moment, it feels good, but not long term. And I think really the key is that emphasis on sales, sold, and what is the intention? I think people do like to be sold to when they know that there's something they want or need. They know that they're stuck. They know that they need guidance. They're looking for a professional to help them. And a professional is someone who they can trust, that they know has their best interest in mind and will be around long-term. When they find that person, that's what they're excited for. And I would contest willing to pay for and willing to, it's not about the money. It's about the value. It's about what they're getting out the other end. So that's the big thing. Today's focus was about why sales is such a dirty word. Hopefully for you watching, tuning in, listening, podcast, live, everywhere, help you make that shift in your own mindset too, especially if you're already on board and understanding that old school sales is wrong, but putting it in a light where it helps you with your mindset. And then even in your conversations, right? With the people you're trying to enroll, trying to move forward, trying to help, is making it clear to them that old mode. And then there's you, right? What you're doing, what you're trying to do, how you want to move people with something like authentic persuasion, with trying to help them, being their guide, helping them get to a better place. And that you're doing that with them and for them, that you're there. Whether you use the word sales, whether you use the word persuasion, whether you use the word influence, doesn't matter. But again, the key is get to the point mindset-wise where you're not afraid of saying that you're in sales, right? If you hesitate with sales, there might be something in your mind where you think that's dirty, and separate what the action actually means. So that's it for today. Love the comments. Again, thank you, Michaela. Michael Johnson said, this is on LinkedIn, I'm watching here on my phone while we're doing this, that he agrees with Michaela. And then Scott Venko said 100. And that's exciting because in a few hours, I'm going to be recording for his podcast, which should be a blast. So glad you're tuning in here. Thanks everyone else that I might not be able to see where you're at. Again, every week I do this at noon Eastern. Next week, it'll actually be on Thursday because I'll be on traveling on Friday, but you can always find this on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on the Cutter Consulting Group page. YouTube is a really good place as well. Like I said, my channel there, I'm putting videos on there all the time, short clips, longer ones, as much content as I can just to help people in sales. And then of course, there's the Authentic Persuasion Show podcast where you can check that out. I'm now back, season 6, 5 episodes a week, coming out swinging, just a lot of content, short episodes, long episodes, guest episodes, replays from this show. You can catch these. They happen on Fridays and then they're replayed on Mondays the following week. So make sure to tune in all those. And when in doubt, if you're looking for more content, if you're looking for the kind of stuff that I have out there, you can always start with jasoncutter.com. It's a great resource for all of this stuff. And you can go on there, whether you're in sales, whether you're in leadership, you're running a team, and you're looking for ways to improve your team, things like that. There's training workshops that I'm doing for teams. There's consulting, all of this just to help people sell more, close more deals, make more money, do it in a way that's leveraging authentic persuasion, helping people out there in the world, leaving people better than you found them. And that's it for this episode. I hope everyone has a great weekend, and I will catch you all next week.